I love brains.
Brains are delicious.
Super smart people have the best trip. Best brains.
Well, if you eat a brain, do you think that you can take in the knowledge?
Of course.
Okay.
That's good. That's what I would assume. Every sci-fi show has ever told me.
Yeah. Okay, welcome everybody to the 12th episode of Podcasts for Good. My name is Heather Lucas. I am the Combined Fund Drive Fiscal and Policy Coordinator. Today, I have the pleasure of having, instead of my standard co-host, Philip Kerrigan...
A better one today.
A better co-host. Oh, snap.
Oh, two snaps. I'm Jerrica Ferguson. I handle marketing and development for the Washington State Combined Fund Drive, and it's actually my pleasure to sit with you today
and
do a podcast with you. I love... like doing podcasts, and so it's fun to do it with you. Haven't had the opportunity to yet.
Yeah, and I gotta say, sometimes when you'll be listening to the podcast and you're like laughing at something, or you're like, oh yeah, I'm always just like, Jerrica likes that podcast.
Yeah, I know.
I dig it.
I was just listening to our Halloween podcast that you, me, and Philip did, and I could not stop giggling, and I was like, wow, we're funny.
We're funny people. Well, when you bring an element of Nicolas Cage in...
How can you not?
How can you not be funny?
Hey, he's a great actor.
See, that was funny.
Yeah, it was funny.
So, Nicolas Cage aside...
Yeah.
Today, we are doing a podcast about pretty much Veterans Day, mm-hmm. veterans issues, specifically homelessness and job placement, because... issues regarding veterans are far-stemming and major, mm-hmm. and you can't just... No, one podcast ain't gonna do it.
No. I mean, you could have a... I mean, let's be honest, you can have a series of this and
yeah,
and
we could record this all year.
Yeah, and you could still not get to every single point
exactly.
of different issues that are going on
exactly.
in veteran services.
Yeah, so today we're going to be interviewing the executive director for Operation Ward 57. Mm-hmm. Her name is Brittany Hamilton. Just wanted to go over some stats about Veterans Day and veterans in Washington State.
Yeah, Heather, what is Veterans Day?
What is Veterans Day? So, I think most people just know that it's a day and we get it off, you know,
mm-hmm.
but, some history about it. It was originally called Armistice Day and it was, the first one was November 11th, 1919, which was the first anniversary of World War One.
Okay.
So in 1926, Congress passed a resolution for an annual observance on November 11th, mm-hmm. which is also what day?
Oh, should I say it?
Yeah.
It's also Washington State's birthday.
It is.
As well, yeah. On
so
November
here,
11th,
we
1889.
Get two for one for November 11th. But Veterans Day, like Memorial Day, Memorial Day is more for veterans who've passed away. Veterans Day recognizes everybody, active mm-hmm. duty or not. So, yeah.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, right.
Thanks for the little history there.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. I know you like history.
I do love history. I was actually surprised you were going to bring up Washington's birthday because I was actually like refraining from that.
Oh, you were like, I can't wait to tell you about Washington's birthday.
Well, because I love state symbols. So
yeah, you do.
It's a little... Okay. Give me some stats, though.
So, yeah, in Washington State, I mean, we do have a number of facilities. We'll talk about a little bit of those when we talk with Brittany. But before we actually start recording, you and I were talking about how there's JBLM.
Yep.
There's Fairchild.
There's also Bangor Naval Base up
exactly.
in Bremerton. And what's so interesting, too, is there's a lot of history of multiple forts. I mean, there's more than that, I'm sure. But multiple forts that are out of commission, like Fort Warden.
Yeah.
Up north, which I recommend visiting. It's a cool place.
Yeah, it is
that
a cool place.
You can still, like, see where, you know, turrets would have been. And you can walk around the whole campus and see how people live their lives there and what was being built there. Washington State's really covered in multiple different forts and fortresses.
I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Mm-mm.
Like, they think about Washington State, rain, green, coffee,
trees.
Music. They don't think anything about, like, it's
probably,
really fortified. You know?
It was. I mean, it was a huge thing to make sure that we had security on our borders there during, you know, World War One. Those bases were never really used, though. Fort Warden, as an example, wasn't really used for anything as
like a military standpoint.
Yeah, like they never fought there. Yeah, thankfully, in the, in that sense. But it was actually more used. They thought, you know, people medical were going to have to come there.
Yeah,
from the specific and stuff. But yeah, the base was never as used as you know, never had a shoot that fire, you know, into the.
Yeah, that would be bad if there was like actual fighting.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that.
No, I wouldn't like that either. I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't like that.
No.
So, I was checking out some other stats for what kind of, like, the numbers for veterans in Washington State. And the Department of Veterans Affairs for Washington State says that there are 593,350 veterans. 593,350.
Wow.
Yeah, so like 500,000 veterans. Yeah. In Washington State, that's quite a few.
That is quite a few.
So, as far as active duty members, active duty and reserve members of the military, a website, governing.com, they say as of May 2016, Washington State had 65,731 active duty and reserve members of the military.
And how do we compare to the other states?
So, we're seventh as far as active duty and reserve. So, California has 190,000. Mm-hmm. The California, Texas, North Carolina, and Virginia all have six figures as far as, like, how many people are there. But, yeah, we're 65,000.
You know, for a state that I think sometimes really gets forgotten about in just the sense of the world, because people hear Washington and then all of a sudden you're like DC and you're like no, the state above Oregon and California,
Canada, come on,
we're south of Canada. We have such a great huge impact. I mean, we have so many military veterans here.
But yeah, I mean, like 500,000 veterans in our state, that's crazy talk. Like,
that's crazy.
Yeah, I never would have imagined there'd be that many.
I was trying to think, when you said that first number, how many people are in Seattle, and I feel like it's like 600,000 or something.
Is it? I feel like it's a million.
Is it a million?
Yeah.
I feel like I know.
Because, I mean, we're like what are we? We're like, how many million people? I think we have like seven?
Do we have seven? Yeah,
we're about
right.
7 million.
You're right, yeah.
Yeah, and I know Seattle's most populous, followed by Spokane.
That's
and
right.
And it makes sense
Spokane
that...
Spokane has like a like 200,000 or something.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense that there'd be a lot of...
I'm making statistics up.
Just go with it. Yeah. I like it. Spokane has 3.6 billion people.
I was like, what?
I like how you looked at me kind
of serious. I looked
at
you like, wait, did you have that in your notes?
Yeah, yeah. Statistics show Spokane is a large city. Fact.
Bears. Beats Battlestar
Galactica.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so there's a serious population here, and they definitely need services. Mm-hmm. So it's good that places like Operation Warp 57 exist.
It is true, and I'm really excited to talk with them and get a better understanding of how they help these injured service members and their loved ones.
Yeah,
I mean, they just have such big hearts. What they do, and so let's get Brittany in here.
Well, first. Don't jump to it. Yeah, question of the podcast.
Ooh.
Philip and I have a traditional question of the podcast. So, Jerrica Ferguson, I'm going to ask you, since we're, you know, movie and pop culture geeks, Nicolas Cage.
You guys are, yeah.
Well, we are, absolutely. But, I mean, you love...
Oh, goodness.
Nicolas Cage so much. Okay. So, tell me, what's your favorite movie featuring characters who are active duty or veterans?
Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, yeah?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, it's a classic.
It is a classic.
Can't not love that movie.
Yeah. Well, Spielberg, he's got the epic, war epic down.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Now, there's a lot of different movies out there that I enjoy those, but that's probably, if you're going to say favorite
movie,
that's the one.
I got to tell you, though, when Ted Danson shows up halfway through that movie, it throws me off every single time.
Yeah.
Every single time, I'm like... Why is Ted Danson here?
See, what's funny about that is that's why I don't watch movies that often. So then that problem never happens.
I see.
So I just don't know any actor and actress. Okay. And then I'm like, it's always someone new.
Well, for whatever reason, the first time I saw that movie, it threw me for a loop. Like, I was in it. I was living it. I was right there with
everyone
character.
Else,
I was there. And then Ted Danson's there all of a sudden. I was so confused. I think I actually stopped and looked around and said, Ted Danson? Why is Ted Danson here?
I mean, that's why it matters, as they put into...
Yeah, casting matters.
Casting matters.
Hashtag casting matters. Yeah. So I'm an 80s kid, and
no way.
I know.
I didn't pick up that.
Shut up. So my favorite military movie is Stripes. You ever see that with Bill Murray? Mm-mm. Bill Murray and Harold Ramis?
I've heard it.
Yeah.
From my brother, who's also in that same era.
Bill Murray was like the king of the 80s. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
It's a funny one.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. I've seen his picture around.
Have you? Oh, yeah, yeah. He's just a little well-known. Yeah.
I've like seen a few movies with him.
Yeah, just a few.
Yeah. Yeah. Couldn't name any, but...
Well, I just told you Stripes. Name that one in the future.
Okay.
Yeah, he probably regrets Garfield the most.
But, oh, well.
Yeah,
yeah.
Who wouldn't?
I mean, I did watch or read that a lot in the comic.
Oh, I read that a lot, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I had a whole book.
I did, too.
Yeah.
Nice.
Ooh.
See?
Do you remember what color the cover was?
Mine was pink. Blue. Yeah, mine was blue.
Mine was pink.
Okay.
Well, it was like a fuchsia.
Yeah?
Yeah. It really wasn't mine. It was my brother's, but I just stole it from him.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I mean, you have siblings for a reason. One of those is to steal from them.
Some people call it stealing. I say share.
Share. There you go.
Joking, John.
Hashtag love you still.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, we will get right to the interview.
We're actually going to be talking with Brittany Hamilton with Operation War 57.
So we'll take it away. So we're here today with Brittany Hamilton, the executive director of Operation Ward 57.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, can you give us a little history about Operation Ward 57?
Yeah. So, we originally started back in about 2006, 2007 in Washington, D.C. at Walter Reed Army Medical Center.
Okay.
Ward 57 was kind of known as the amputee ward, and that was kind of the prime time that a lot of folks were coming back severely injured from Iraq and Afghanistan, and the hospitals kind of overrun, weren't ever planning to have that many people coming through. And so we initially simply started there, just taking care of folks coming through, the families and the staff. So we would, we built a giant family room and TV room, and we would buy actually supplies for the staff because the funding was so low. And that's where we initially started. But we quickly learned that, you know, they would transfer out of there, or they, mm-hmm. some people would stop in very briefly and then go to another military facility to recover. And so we just learned it goes way beyond these walls. And,
sure.
And so we eventually expanded the program nationwide. And so now we serve all wounded, ill and injured, and their families, primarily post 9/11, but we do have some programs that are open to all era. And we, originally, our co-founders, one lived here in Washington State, and then one was a nurse on the ward.
Okay.
And so that's, we've always originally been based here in Washington State, doing our administrative and then also working with the bases here.
Nice.
So I've always said we're kind of originated in both Washingtons.
Yeah.
Some people are always confused. They're like,
which Washington?
Which Washington, yeah.
Like, why am I sending this, you know, a check to Seattle or something?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And so that's allowed us to kind of expand our reach, mm-hmm. and be able to, nice. To hit more families. And so all of our services are open nationwide, and we don't put a timeline on, mm-hmm. when they can apply for services.
Sure.
Because that was the other thing we quickly learned was, you know, it's not always just the moment they're in the hospital, but, you know, there's a lot of lifelong stuff. So.
Right on.
Yeah.
And then as far as, like, Washington State, do you just have the one location in Seattle?
So we actually run it out of my home to save costs for office, but most of what we do is in the community, on the phone,
sure.
email, that kind of thing. So we serve all of Washington, uh-huh. although I would say the most of our requests come from kind of Western Washington, Puget Sound region.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few in Spokane that we get requests for, occasionally like the Tri-City area.
Sure.
But most of it, I would actually say, because most of the medical facilities are here, you get a lot of the veterans are kind of in the Seattle, Tacoma, Olympia kind of area.
Sure.
So, yeah. So I always say I'm really bad at saying no, so I don't like to turn people away. So generally, we will find a way to help no matter kind of where they're at.
Nice. Yeah. Right on.
So
yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So as you know, I know you guys handle case management and advocacy and some educational things that you guys do on top of the many different supports that you do. When veterans come home, right, In your experience, does job placement and homelessness affect many veterans?
It does. I would say first and foremost is the job. There's, you know, some are struggling with their own mental health issues coming back, and so just being able to work is hard enough. But those that can often struggle to find people willing to take them in and hire them. And especially if there happens to be a disability along there, then it makes it that much harder for them. And so I feel like a lot of them that can work do struggle to find the employment. And that's all veterans, and it doesn't even have to be a disability.
Sure.
And then often as a result, the finances get tough, and then that's where I think a lot of the homelessness will sometimes come out is they get home and they suddenly, you know, they're not able, they get out of the military, they're not able to find employment, and then finances start running through, one bad thing happens, and then they'll often be on the brink of homelessness. And unfortunately, a lot of the services that are out there don't step in until you're actually homeless. So it's really frustrating for some because they're trying to be proactive and get help, but a lot of services won't kick in until they consider them actually homeless and they've been evicted. And so there's this kind of gap that often happens, and it's really frustrating sometimes because you see people trying to do the right thing. But yeah, jobs are hard. Even my husband, when he got out of the service, he found a lot of stereotyping of what a veteran is and how they act. And, you know, I know at one interview that he got asked, he got, well, how would you handle working around regular people? You know, and he was like,
what do you mean?
It's not all drop and do 20 push-ups and I'm screaming at you kind of thing. And you could see this kind of bias that came in with, you know, but he also got out and had this kind of rough, you know, appearance, because that's how, like, in, you know, in the military, you often are in front of boards when you're being interviewed, and there's multiple people and they're grilling you and they're doing that. And then you go out for a job interview and there's a lot of boards, but they want the opposite. They want the relating and the human aspect. And, you know, these guys and girls get out there and, you know, they don't want to say anything. And then they're looking at them like, you don't, you know, you're not very personable. And so, so I think there's a lot that needs to kind of be learned from employers to be more comfortable, and then also some training of veterans on how to apply for work and, you know, do those interviews. So
do you think it's like a big stigma for employers still to hire veterans? Like, you see, like, hey, we hire veterans, this is great, this is what we do, but like,
I mean, personally, I think so. I think there's some amazing companies out there doing a lot, but I still feel like a lot of them are only bringing in entry level. And here you have people who've been 10, 15, 20 plus years doing specialized work that have, that out in the civilian world are very high degrees, very high earning, and nobody generally will translate that.
Yeah, they don't equal the same for some reason.
So frustrating. A lot of times they're like, well, we could get you in a, you know, customer service here answering phones, and they're like, you know, I used to handle multi-million dollar contracts, and, you know, so I feel like sometimes there's that, that's the hard piece, is actually recognizing what they're equivalent to in the civilian world, and spouses. I mean, they're right along there with there. A lot of them struggle to find work. And so there's some great companies that are starting to offer, you know, military spouses employment as well. Because they, you know,
you gotta move around.
They move around and you can't stay in a job, and you know, and then when you finally do settle down, you don't have a work history because you've been moving around. So
that is really difficult. I don't think a lot of people recognize that as an issue in both of those parts.
So some, like I said, some companies are doing great. There's a lot of groups out there that are starting to really push, but I know from, even just from our, like I said, my husband's experience, which was just a couple years ago, it's, you know, it was kind of a shock for us both to be like, really? That's what they, you know, what they said to you and how they, you know, they treated. So we had to work on his people skills too. And this is what they want in an interview.
Well, that's difficult if you're, if, you know, you don't know that. And you're not getting any training or practice.
Or you're just like, I don't understand why I'm not being hired. I have all the skills.
It got, you know, it, and it's a tough market. I mean, you know, especially several years ago with the economy down, I mean, it was really tough to find work. And unfortunately, a lot of people were getting out then. And So I, you know, people are starting to find work, and some have to just adapt the type of work they do because of maybe their disability or what they can do. You know, they physically can't stand and do things, so they have to find work other ways. We get a lot of our volunteers and people who give back to us are often either wounded or disabled. And part of it's wanting to be able to give back.
Sure. Mm.
But some of it's they've started to find that they have a lot of skills in like networking and fundraising and doing all of that. And so a lot of folks will gravitate now to help working with other nonprofits.
Nice.
Because they're starting to build their skills
yeah.
that way. Things they didn't know that they could do. And then they're like, I'm really good at this, you know? So I always encourage a lot of folks when they're, you know, really starting out, just volunteer, get involved in stuff, because sometimes that opens a lot of doors too you know, people didn't expect. So
nice,
completely.
So what's the most important resource for a veteran looking for work outside of military service?
You know, I think, well, one thing I think Washington does great is really just knowing where to go for applying for work is
okay.
probably one of the most biggest steps, things that they need to know. And I think Washington does great with that, with their website that offers, you know, all the state jobs on one.
Sure.
USA Jobs offers all the, but I feel like, and those are all great resources, but I feel like a lot of people just don't even know where to start, where to go to look for jobs.
Uh-huh.
And so I think there's a lot of employers out there that also have jobs, but it's finding the veterans. And so I wish there was kind of a better way of when they're transitioning out that the military could start to connect folks with mm-hmm. those places and where to go. Because a lot of times people will only think government or state jobs, and
yeah.
there's a lot of private jobs out
yeah.
there. And it's like, well, how do I, what websites work and what don't?
Yeah.
Where do I go?
Yeah.
You know, are these legit? Some of these, you know, are they legit websites anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they just spam and, you know,
right.
that kind of thing? So
yeah.
I think that's having a good base of where to go, where to
yeah.
look, and then leaning on your friends and family, because a lot
sure.
of them work for different companies that, you know, you wouldn't even think to apply to.
So let's take a break and talk a little bit about Friday Flicks. Looking for fun and inspiring ways to connect with different charities in our program? The CFD has got you covered. Every Friday during the annual giving campaign, the Combined Fund Drive will release a special video highlighting one of our member charities and what they do for the community. The videos are filled with amazing stories of inspiring people who are helping those in need every day. Check out each video for special content and different ways to give. For all our videos, visit www.cfd.wa.gov/cfd/videos. And back to the show.
With exiting the military, you'd think that there'd be like a really robust department that would handle like active duty members going from active duty to civilian life. Like, how do you transition from one to the other? I don't know. I mean, is
and
there...
they kind of do.
Okay.
They've done better than they used to do in the past. They
okay.
used to just literally cut you pretty much loose and
yeah.
you were on your own. Now there's a week or two, or might even be more than that, of there's a lot of classes that
yeah.
you're required to take.
Okay.
But when you're ready to get out,
yeah,
it's like senioritis. You're
exactly.
trying to get out of there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nobody's
yeah.
paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, they want out, or they're not fully realizing what they're really needing to pay attention
mm-hmm.
to.
Sure.
So I feel like some of it's a rush to just, I just want to get out. Sign
yeah.
me off on everything. Let
yeah,
me go do
yeah.
this stuff.
Yeah.
I know how to read my paycheck. I know how to read, because there's, you know, they'll be okay understanding your leave and earning statement
sure.
and, you know, and they're thinking, I've been in the military already. I already know how to do this. And
yeah, yeah.
how to write a resume. Ah, I know how to write a resume.
Yeah.
But, so there's some stuff that's being offered,
yeah.
but it's, they have to know to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if a lot of people, some people are,
yeah.
but I think some are just like, get me out. And
yeah.
especially if there's the medical issues too, then that complicates things
sure.
because they're more focused on that than,
yeah.
you know, what classes I need to be attending.
And do you guys help with that? I know you have different programs and different case management. What are kind of those services that you provide that can assist, whether it's a transition or like that pre-before homelessness, or to help, I'm not necessarily maybe job placement, but mm-hmm. What are kind of some of those resources that you guys can provide for these veterans?
Yeah, so we obviously we encourage them to volunteer partially just to start getting out there and getting exposed and getting around folks.
Yeah.
We do often offer small emergency grants mm-hmm. That we can do. They're not huge, but they can sometimes pay a rent or pay utilities or things
sure.
like that. So we often get folks that will email us and say, hey, I'm just got my eviction notice and, you know, I just need this paid and then I'm good because I've got a job lined up.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to get paid, you know, for right. a little while and there's this gap and I don't want to fall behind. So that's one of our main things that we're doing. And then also trying to connect them with other groups that might be able to help support. Unfortunately, a lot of times they don't reach out until they're literally at that point where they're being kicked out.
Yeah.
Because I understand it's hard to reach out for help and you're yeah. trying to do it all on your own.
It's yeah. pride. You know, you have pride.
So sometimes it's a little too late by the time they get to us to be able to really mm-hmm. avoid the eviction.
Sure.
Sometimes we've even just paid for when they're getting housing, you know, there might be a week or so we've, you know, provided hotel for mm-hmm. them to have a place to go to because mm-hmm. we'll get, you know, a call going, I'm sleeping in my car and, yeah. you know, I've got something lined up. I've worked with some groups, but, you know, it's cold, it's raining.
Yeah.
So we try to provide some of those resources when mm-hmm. we can, as well as just the kind of case management. Okay, here's some shelters that you can go to
yeah.
or,
yeah.
you know, there's some campgrounds where, you know, you might be eligible for free camping. And mm-hmm. if you've got that, it at least gives you a place to go and,
yeah.
you know, that kind of thing. Now we're getting in the winter. Okay. It's not as if... Not as yeah. much fun, but in the summer, you know,
yeah. it's easier.
It's
then.
Easier.
Yeah.
You know, so we just try to, when they come to us, we're just trying to fill the gap however we can. We can't always mm-hmm. do it. And sometimes they need way bigger than what we can do. But there's a few folks that also know, okay, I'm getting out of the military in 2 months, you know, so we also try to encourage them if they reach out, you know, to start saving and planning now,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you can do some stuff to help, you know, protect yourself yeah. when you get out.
Yeah.
Especially if they're waiting for VA benefits to mm-hmm. kick in and that kind of thing. So
yeah.
Being a little more proactive, I think, when they're getting out would be really good too, just to plan. Okay, you know, there may be a few months where I'm not getting a paycheck and what do I do?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
applying for unemployment if that's what they need to do or something like
mm-hmm.
that. So
mm-hmm.
yeah. So this may be a big question, but if you have any insight, what kind of changes could Washington State undertake to reduce veteran homelessness and unemployment?
I think partially a little bit of what we've talked about. I think being able to be more proactive in helping them before they become homeless.
While they're still active veteran.
While they're still
duty.
Active duty, or even when they've just transitioned out,
mm-hmm.
Having resources available to them to turn to. You know, maybe it is the financial, I just need some rent covered, or help in finding homes. You know, sometimes it's really hard because if they have a family, there's a wife and kids, and they can't
yeah.
all go to a shelter together. Or, and that's our biggest thing is folks are like, it's just, my car broke down, we had to spend this money, and now I've got a job lined up, but I'm going to, you know, we're going to get kicked out, and
yeah.
what can I do? And a lot of the VA resources won't kick in. Those are like ones that won't
yeah.
kick in until they're actually homeless.
Yeah.
And so I think just overall having that, those resources or those supports, those kinds of things. And there are some, I know the Washington State Veterans Affairs tries to work with folks beforehand, but
sure.
but that's usually our biggest complaint is nobody will touch me until I'm actually homeless.
Yeah.
yeah.
So that preventative measure, that preventative support would be huge. And then as far as jobs, it's just, again, it's getting out there and hiring those vets and recognizing them for the skills that they have.
Yeah.
And the experience that they have.
Sure.
And kind of welcoming them in and, you know, letting them, they have a lot of great ideas, a lot of great ways to run things, especially more effectively than a lot of places might be used to.
Yeah.
And so I think utilizing that would be probably the best thing that they
yeah.
could do. And it makes them feel, gives them worth too.
Yeah.
Like, people appreciate me. People understand I have these skills. And, you know, I didn't just spend 15 years in the military to go back like I was a teenager and starting over again, you know.
So, like you're a grown adult.
Yes.
Come on. Exactly. So you said it's a nationwide organization, right? Do you see that there, the Washington, for the same question, the homelessness and unemployment, how do you have any kind of idea of how that compares to other states or other places that you've talked to that assist in this?
I think nationwide it's a pretty steady thing across, especially work and the unemployment. Obviously, I think bigger cities or bigger areas, they're the ones that are going to experience it more because, you know, like for even for Washington, we have a huge veteran population because there's a lot of great military facility treatment facilities and VAs and therapy options and things like that. So a lot of veterans come here. You know, you get out into some more rural areas and there's not going to be as many resources. So you will find less services out in those areas or in those states that don't have as much. And, you know, those things are still there. And I know some people struggle, and that's why sometimes they'll reach out to us going, hey, we don't have anything in our area. And sometimes that can be hard. But a lot of veterans also, some like to move towards where all the facilities are, and then some want to get away from people, and they move to the very rural areas because they want away from people, too. But I would say nationwide, I mean, those are, you know, it's tough for a lot of folks. And again, you know, caregivers are right in there. A lot of people don't think about them.
Yeah, you guys provide services to caregivers as well.
Yeah.
Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we just, you know, we found that the families often get overlooked in all of this, and it's not just the veteran that needs services, but you know, you have caregivers who end up giving up their jobs to take care of somebody, and sometimes they work a job and they're still taking care of them, but they have to have jobs that are flexible, that are can let them leave last minute if there's an emergency or if there's something, and so we really just try to include them in everything that we do, provide the same services. We try to do some like caregiver days out where we give them a break and go pamper them, pair them up with other caregivers so that they can talk and learn about resources because some don't know what services are out there for them. And we try to include the kids because we've also, a lot of people don't ask about the kids. They might ask when there's maybe first an initial injury, but people kind of forget about the kids over time and just assume they're everything's fine. And the reality is a lot of them go through really difficult periods in their life and there's no support for them and nobody asks about them. So we try to provide, you know, family activities and supports and things like that because the caregivers, you know, and then like again when they finally maybe want to get a job, they haven't been working for a while and it gets really difficult for them. So there's been a good push in the last few years to start to recognize caregivers more for, you know, what they do and what they offer and employment that's flexible and understanding and not going to fire you if you, you know, if you have to leave for something or, if, you know, if there's a medical emergency or a family issue kind of thing. So,
well, do you think that of all the states in the country, I mean, how do you think Washington fits in the scale, like the like best to worst? I mean, are the services we provide for veterans better than the rest of the country or worse?
I would definitely say we're one of the, from my experience and my knowledge, one of the top ones. There's, again, sometimes it falls into where some of the major medical facilities are, tend to be some better areas. You get out into the rural areas or smaller towns and it gets a little more difficult. You know, there's some great care provided on the East Coast, you know, because so many are, that's kind of the first stop. But, you know, and California's got a few, Texas has been great toward veterans, but I really do think I, you know, outside of running this organization, I also work at the VA hospital in Seattle. And I talk to a lot of veterans who constantly say the care they're receiving is better than anywhere where they've gotten before. And a lot of people will come here for that. You know, everybody has good and bad experiences. You'll hear bad stories, but a lot of them just say there's so much being offered. The state recognizes we've got great, you know, legislative and officials and Congress and senators that are really pushing for our veterans, and I think that has made a huge difference. A lot of them feel comfortable going to those people when they have issues. And so I think Washington is doing a great job.
Right on.
There's definitely some other states that are, they don't really get it as much, but again, they may not see as much of a high veteran population as, you know, other states do.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, what do donations do for your organization? So when someone donates or does something, what does that do?
Yeah. So, so as I mentioned, I work full time in addition in the running organization. I'm the only partially paid employee. everyone else is volunteer. We work it out of our home. So the goal is to keep all of our costs down and our administrative, obviously. So we put our money towards a lot of different programs. Sometimes I like to say we get sent a lot of people that don't fit into other organizations, or they might not quite qualify, and we get sent a lot of people. So a lot of our requests can sometimes kind of, I like to say, either be odd or fall outside of things.
Okay.
But we start, it could be from when they're in the hospital in recovery, so bringing them anything from clothing to meals to just essentials, because sometimes they're there last minute, no notice, obviously.
Yeah.
So we'll provide for them in there in the hospital, and then lifelong. So we do the small emergency grants. Mm-hmm. We do provide support for service animals, for the costs of service animals, so emergency vet bills, vests, food, supplies when those are needed.
That's cool.
We do fun morale boosting events. So as I kind of mentioned, maybe the caregiver days or family days. We're taking a group to like Garth Brooks this weekend.
Oh, nice.
You know, fun. Yeah. We'll do those kinds of things, or sporting events, or you know, those those types of things. And then we'll just get odd requests. So it might be a caregiver is their service member, their veteran is struggling, and so their focus is that, and then maybe their housekeeping is falling aside, and we'll help pay for, you know, a house cleaner to come in for a month to kind of give them a break, or maybe some repairs for something in the house that just broke. We've bought appliances before. We've bought, you know, lawnmower when the lawn, you know. So sometimes our requests are very individual, and it's really to take those stressors off.
Yeah.
I like to always say, you know, sometimes you can be having, you know, a really horrible week, and all it takes is a light bulb burning out, and you could like fall to the ground in tears, and you're like, oh, this is the end of the world.
Yeah.
And if you say to somebody, well, a light bulb burn out, they're going to think you're crazy. So, but it's those stressors that build up. So when people come to us, our goal is to try to take some of those stressors away so that they can keep functioning, they can be healthy, happy, focus on the family.
Yeah.
So we get a lot of sometimes odd requests that'll come in that, you know, I'm like, I don't know how to quite classify this.
Right.
But again, I'm really bad at saying no, because my goal is to try to make things a little bit easier. So we do that. And then around the holidays, we provide a lot of support when we need to, via either gifts, meals, you know, those kinds of things too.
Nice.
So it's kind of whatever comes our way.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any upcoming events or any programs you want to talk about?
So right now we do have our, since it's the holidays, we do have our Adopt a Family program running. And that is a program that is a nationwide program. We do try to pair locally, though, as best we can.
Sure.
Where sponsors can and businesses, individuals can sign up to sponsor a Wounded Warrior or a Gold Star family, so a family that's lost somebody in service, and provide gifts for them for the holiday and a gift card for like a meal for them. And we've got that up and running right now. We're just starting to pair the families. So right now we are actually looking for more families to apply.
Oh, okay.
We just suspended some of the sponsor applications while we get everybody paired, because we want to make sure we have, we don't want to let sponsors down either. So we're going to try to get everybody paired up. And if we get enough families back in, then we'll start with sponsors again. But, you know, we did it last year and we had close to 300 families. It was like 900 kids total sponsored around the country.
That's rad.
For it. So, and then we also will be coming up in November, Thanksgiving weekend, we partner with the Seattle Marathon and kind of do a Iraq-Afghanistan Run for Remembrance team as a part of the marathon. So they've been a great charity partner for us. And so we'll, if people want to run or run in support of people, they can they can do that as well. They can also sign up to volunteer and hand out the medals at the finish line.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
So it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
It's a lot of fun. I like to hand out the medals. I'm not running
anywhere. Yeah. You got to get up way early for that.
Yeah.
Come on.
And run like, 25 something miles or whatever.
Yeah. Let's just keep count.
Really. Right.
Sleep in, hand out some medals.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like it. Well, right on.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Brittany, for joining us today.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Appreciate it. So we spoke with Brittany. We just finished speaking with Operation Ward 57.
Yeah, so one of the things that really stood out to me when talking with Brittany Hamilton was that nobody really thinks about the outlying family.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Like, my dad is a veteran.
Yeah.
And being in the military, like, we had to move a lot when I was younger. And until we came to Washington State, like, it was something where my mom didn't get to have a career. Like, she couldn't just, like, get into a job and then move up into any kind of management or higher positions because she'd leave.
Which makes it so much more difficult for the family
to be established.
When you have one member of the family that doesn't have an ability to continue their career path.
And,
I found that really interesting when she was talking about the spouses.
Yeah.
And how, there's upcoming programs and more companies are recognizing this. And the whole thing about how there's a stigma.
Yeah.
Like, I never expected people to, treat her husband the way they did in an interview.
Yeah.
That was kind of shocking.
Like, I always knew that there was a stigma about hiring veterans, and I didn't quite understand why, because, I mean, they're humans.
Yeah.
Like, what's the deal?
What's the problem?
You need people to fill the job, so here's an applicant.
Yeah.
But I could see, like, with some people thinking, oh, you're a veteran, you've been through some serious or terrible or traumatic experience, maybe you'll be here and you'll snap.
Yeah, and I just think that's unfortunate that that's the mindset that it sounds like some employers have. And I think it really comes down to, like, what she was saying is that training of employers, too, of this is what veterans are coming into. And then on the other end, teaching veterans, skills for, being a civilian in those interviews. I can't imagine going through something as rigorous as them and then coming in and having to flip talking to a board completely differently of how you would talk to a board in the military.
Yeah. And then also with the fact that transitioning from a military life to a civilian life, your experience, everything you've done and learned, that can just be thrown off to the side.
Which is so wrong.
Why would you get rid of that?
Yeah, to say that, you can do $1 million contracts, like Brittany was saying, and then go into, like, well, customer service translates.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Do you have contract specialists?
Right.
Do you work with contracts? Because I could totally do that.
Right. I don't understand why some people aren't seeing those match up. And I've heard stories before through friends that are in the military that they, they're medical.
Like a medical doctor.
A medical doctor in the military does not, they can't get the same because they have to go back to school. And I understand there's probably different procedures. I get that. But to say that they have no qualifications.
Yeah, and they'd have to start at square
one
instead.
Yeah, they've been saving lives, our American lives here for our country for years. And then to say that they don't translate. It's frustrating, I think, as a civilian as myself to go, why?
Yeah.
Like, I trust them fighting for us.
Why would I not trust them
in my hospital?
Exactly.
And
you did this job.
Yeah.
You have the experience.
Why wouldn't
you just be in the hospital and working?
That's like 5 years equivalent, like what we see on job applications today. Come on.
Exactly.
She had some really interesting things that she did say and how they started Operation Ward in the building, the Walter Reed building, was really interesting to talk about, Washington to Washington.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of like, wait a minute, when I first was reading on their history, this is a Washington, D.C. based. And I was like, oh, it's actually not. It's actually here out of Washington State. And so that was kind of cool to see the cross country.
Yeah.
And how it is affecting everyone across the country and nationwide of these issues of homelessness and job placement.
I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed that interview with her.
Yeah.
So, some upcoming events. The CFD doesn't actually have anything major, which is nice because We just got done with Major Masquerade Ball.
The Major Masquerade Ball. Which was super successful.
It was the biggest it's ever been. So we're super, super happy with that. Yeah. But right now, we're kind of chilling as we go through the rest of the campaign. So we just got through the first month of the campaign. Now we're into month two. Among other things, November is National Epilepsy Month, National Novel Writing Month, so write that novel, Jerrica.
Planning on it.
Okay, and Native American Heritage Month.
And I'm going to add one more.
Go.
Is also the month for Alzheimer's Month as well.
Yeah.
It's also in November, too.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so November's got a few things going on. Yeah. And then, as we know, Veterans Day is right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And Thanksgiving right after that. So it's holiday time.
It is holiday time.
Indeed.
But what's awesome about that, and we have so many people that give throughout the year, but this time is, I think, a good time to remember that there is a lot of people out there, like Brittany was saying, you know, that couldn't really use the help.
Yeah. So, yeah. Right on. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. And we will catch you on the flip side.
Yeah, and always don't forget to check out our Friday flicks that happen every Friday.
Friday flicks.
Woo-hoo. Peace out.
Bye.